Today I speak only about East Germany, which is a kind of special situation in the communist countries, and I will do it in two parts. First part is that I give some information about the development in East Germany or the German Democratic Republic, some information about the history, how it came that Germany was divided after the war, and a bit about the political system in East Germany, the economical system, and then I prepared a kind of vita, a kind of life of one person in East Germany with slides. So you can, about a normal person, not a Christian, who was born in East Germany and his whole life. I choose a man. And that gives you a bit more an impression how the life on the grassroots level is really. First, some information about the development to the two Germanys we have today. And of course, it didn't start only in 1945, the end of the Second World War, but it started much earlier, the development to the two Germanys. I think one important point in the development of the Germany we have today is the end of the First World War. Germany lost the war, and the Treaty of Versailles after the war put very hard conditions on Germany. And some people discuss whether this was the decisive fault of the Western allies for the development of a democratic system in Germany. After the First World War in 1918, the Emperor of Germany had to go, had to quit, and a democratic system was established known as the Weimar Republic, because the constitution of this state, the new Germany, was formulated in Weimar, which is now in East Germany, in Thuringia. But the Weimar Republic was from the very beginning on a weak system, a weak economic system. And we could discuss, we have a historian here, whether the Weimar Republic had a chance in history or not. Some people say it hadn't a chance because the conditions in the beginning were so difficult that the development led directly to the Nazi Germany. That's only a thesis, you can discuss it. But you had in the Weimar Republic several powers, political powers. You had, and only two parties or two powers were really supportive for the democratic system. And these powers were the liberals and the social democrats. They really wanted to try a democratic system, which was very new in Germany. We don't have the democratic development like you have it in the United States, and you have to keep that in mind if you think especially about East Germany today. People have not much exercise in doing democratic political work. The political powers who were against the Weimar Republic and against the democratic system were, on the one hand, the conservatives, and the churches were part of that. That is one big fault the church made in history, that the church didn't support the Weimar Republic and the democratic system. And therefore the church bears some guilt for the development to the Nazi Germany, I think. The National Socialist, which developed to a powerful party only from 1925 on and became more and more powerful, and on the other hand the communists, who wanted to establish a communist system like the system in Russia, because in 1917 the Russian Revolution succeeded in Russia and people expected, according to the doctrine of Karl Marx, that if one part of the chain would be broken, the whole chain would follow. And everybody expected that in all the industrial nations in Europe, like Great Britain, France, but especially in Germany, the communist revolution would succeed too. So the communists fought for the succeed of the revolution and not for the democratic system in Germany. And a very decisive factor then was the destabilized economic situation in the end of the 20s. After the inflation period in the early 20s, there was a kind of stabilization of economy in the mid-20s, but in the end of the 20s, there was an enormous amount of jobless people in Germany, and that gave people who worked against the democratic system a lot of support by those people. And if you compare the figures of electors for parties, you can see that the Communist Party won a lot of voices and the National Socialist won a lot of voices. And finally, the Nazis won in January 1933. And they took over the government and they succeed in only few months to destroy the whole democratic system. Only in half a year, in June 1933, the whole democratic system was totally destroyed. There was no parliament, the parties were forbidden. One big trick was to burn the Reichstag, the parliament of Germany, and to put the blame on the communists. That gave Hitler the mean of putting special laws in order. So in 1933, in the end of 1933, the whole democratic system was off in Germany, and the Nazis established a totalitarian state, which led, as we all know, to the Second World War. Because one big thing Hitler had always in mind from 1919 in the Lazarett in Pasewalk in Pomerania, he was very angry about the Versailles Treaty and he wanted to change the conditions Germany was put in by the Allies after the First World War. And the whole start of the Second World War was kind of anger about this treaty, and they wanted to change the whole situation in Europe for the sake of Germany. I don't want to speak much about the war and about the things the Nazis did in Germany. You are familiar with that, and I was surprised how vivid the experience of the Holocaust is in the American nation, and I think that's very important that it is. I don't think that people speak that much about the Holocaust in Europe, and I think it's very important to keep that in mind. But that would lead too far off from my goal, East Germany. The problem of Europe today and the division of Europe today, I think, is based in the development that the Allies of the Second World War became very soon after the World War the main enemies, the Soviet Union and the United States of America. The whole concept of a development in Europe after the Second World War was not established for this situation. And especially Germany, I think, suffers today under this development. In Tehran and in Yalta in 1943, the Western Allies and the Soviet Union, Churchill, Roosevelt, and Stalin, decided that after the war, Germany will be governed by the powers of the Allies as one country. And to do that, they decided, too, that Berlin should be the capital where the from where the Allied powers govern Germany. And therefore we have this strange situation that after the war, after the end of the war on May 8, 1945, the Americans withdraw from large parts of East Germany, what is now East Germany. Leipzig was liberated by the American army. Magdeburg was liberated by the American army. Wismar, where I live now, was liberated by the American army. But according to the treaty in Yalta and Tehran was first, the Americans accepted, and the British and the French accepted, to withdraw and to establish their offices in their parts, in their zones of Germany, and to get one part of Berlin, which was liberated by the Russian army, to govern the whole Germany from there. But the development, in the dramatical development after the war, made a total difference of this concept, because soon after the war it became clear that the Russians didn't want to keep the treaties they had agreed with Roosevelt and with Churchill. What was difficult for the situation was that there was a change in both countries, in the United States and in Great Britain. Churchill lost the elections, and a new leader came into power in Great Britain who was very weak and who was a Labour. That means he had some kind of positive feelings towards the communist system in Russia. And Roosevelt died soon before the war ended. And a new president came into power in the United States who was not very familiar with the situation. And that meant that at the Potsdam Conference in 1945, where the three allies met to decide about the future of Germany, Stalin, the Russian leader, was the only one who really knew what was going on and who really had a concept. And the concept of Stalin was to use the whole Eastern Europe, Poland, Czechoslovakia, Romania, Bulgaria, Hungary, and East Germany as a kind of safety belt for the Soviet Union. And therefore, he wanted to make these countries to kind of satellite states who were totally under control by Russia and who function as a safety belt for Russia. And in a way, you can understand this military concept, because Russia was two times and more in the history overrun by aggressors from the West. The last time by the German army, who almost reached Moscow, who reached the Caucasus in the south. So the safety interest of Russia is in a way understandable. That meant that the Russians decided for their zone, the East Zone, which then became the German Democratic Republic, didn't accept any free elections, any democratic political development. They had a complete government educated in Russia, which was flight in to East Berlin after the war. The famous leader Walter Ulbricht was the head of this government, who came in from Moscow and took over. And it became very clear that they wouldn't accept any free development, but they would regard the East Zone as under their control. And that made it very difficult for the two parts of Germany to work together. The Americans, the French, and the British government tried to establish a democratic system in West Germany and to stabilize the capitalistic economy, by the Marshall Plan. Russia tried to establish a totalitarian system in East Germany and weaken the economy by getting reparation for the war. And if you see the differences in the economy today and the weakness of East German economy, one reason is that we never got help from the Marshall Plan. And okay, I speak about the economic system a bit later. The situation was so that Berlin was a kind of key element in the whole plan. And therefore, the Russians wanted to get Berlin. And if you know the map, it's a very strange situation till now, West Berlin. West Berlin is almost 200 miles inside of East Germany, and it's only 80 miles from the Polish border. So it's really inside East Germany. So what the Russians tried to do is to blockade Berlin. And for over a year, Berlin was totally blocked. No railroad, no car, no truck came into West Berlin. And that was almost the end of West Berlin. If the Americans, and mainly the Americans, decided that they wanted to keep Berlin as part of the Western world, and they built the famous air bridge, and every minute an American plane landed in West Berlin Tempelhof and brought food, energy, coal, everything. Everything what is needed to keep a city alive was brought in by air. Imagine a 2 million city. And it was shortly after the war. That means most of the buildings were destroyed. The whole trade system was off. There was a big black market and people suffered from hunger. And that for almost a year. And then finally the Russians realized that they wouldn't get West Berlin and they gave up and opened the streets and the railroad again. But at this stage it became very clear that Germany would be separated and the unification of Germany would be in the far future whenever. In 1949 the Federal Republic of Germany was founded in May, I think. And shortly after, in October 1949, the German Democratic Republic was founded. And it's interesting that the communists who, in a way, supported the development of the division of Germany, waited always on that the Western act first. So the foundation of the Republic was first in West Germany, the West German army was founded before the East German army, but they had a kind of army, but they didn't call it army, so that they always could say they started with it.
And you also had a kind of constitution which was brought into power, because the first constitution of the GDR was established in 1948. And it's been sort of emergency situation what put into action in October 49.
Right. That's so if you look carefully, you see that it was always started and supported in the Eastern Zone. But the official act was always done first in the West. And that brings some confusion in the political discussion today. Because people who don't know that are very surprised if they are told West Germany was first founded and then East Germany, or the West German army was the first and then the East German, and the integration of West Germany in the NATO was first and then the integration of East Germany in the Comecon. So if you want to judge historical developments, you have to look very carefully. a political system was established in East Germany, which is unique. In all other communist countries, you have only one communist party. In East Germany, you have not even a communist party. It is not called communist party, but it is called Socialist Unity Party. And the reason for that was that in the workers' movement, there was always a struggle from the very beginning of 1918, and therefore this date is so important for the development, between the communists and the social democrats. The Communist Party of Germany was founded in 1918 by Rosa Luxemburg and Karl Liebknecht. And the development of the Communist Party was that they became more and more radical. In the end of the Weimar Republic, the first enemy of the communists were not the Nazi Party, the National Socialists, but the Social Democrats. And the whole work against another party was concentrated on fighting the Social Democrats, because the communists had the ideology that the Social Democrats didn't really want a communist system, but they want a democratic system which is only supportive for the leading class of capitalists and against the interest of the workers. That was the ideology. And therefore, after the war, they forced the Social Democrats to unite with the communists, that there wouldn't be any workers' movement apart from the Communist Party. And therefore, we don't have a Communist Party, because they choose as a title Socialist Unity Party to show that the socialists are integrated in that. But the truth was that the communists had all the important positions in this party, and the communists were the decisive moment in every political decision. But they allowed other parties too. There are several parties in East Germany, and many people are surprised to hear that. We have even a Christian Democratic Union in East Germany. We have a Peasants' Party, a liberal party, and there's one more, a National Democratic Party, NDPD. It's obvious that it's not by accident that I'm not very familiar with the names of the parties, because they have no political role in East Germany. The only reason why these parties exist is to suppose that there is a democratic system, and to give people who really do not want to be in the Communist Party or in the SAD, the Socialist Unity Party, to give them a chance to go to another party but to work for the system. That's exactly the task of the other parties. The CDU for Christians, the Liberals, and the National Democrats for trade people and who have private business and so on, the Peasants' Party for peasants. But these parties have no chance to establish an own political power. It is decided by the communists how many people are in the parliament. So it is not by election that the parties go into the parliament, but by the decision of the communists. So every party has an established part of the parliament. They don't have to worry about seats in the parliament, because they have it guaranteed. The reason for that, the communists say, in a socialist country, there is no struggle between the parties, because all work together for the common goal, the benefit of the communist system. You can think about that. But there are elections. The elections are the public approval of the decisions of the ruling party, the Communist Party. And That is official ideology. I don't tell anything which is hidden. The communists always say there is a ruling party, and that is the Communist Party. That is the leading party, the leading political power. So the elections in East Germany, you can only decide to say no or yes. You cannot decide for a political program. You cannot decide for differences.
Don't you have a possibility now to change names by listing, bringing people which are gone's list up?
Yeah, but that makes no difference because you have no mean to bring anybody in the list because the lists are decided by the Communist Party. So what you can do is to cross the first three names. But that makes no sense, because the other three who are on the list are exactly the same political program, the same political power. There's no difference. So most people don't do that. Only some people who use the election for making a political statement that they are against. But they normally cross everybody out. Yeah. And that is the official ideology. Shortly before I left East Germany, we had elections there. You don't have to go to elections. It is free to go. But 99.3% go to the elections. Because, and that is my experience, the elections start at 7. It makes a good impression if you are there at 7. At 10, 80% of the population has already been to the election. At 12, they prepare lists of people who didn't show up. Around 1 o'clock, somebody rings on your apartment, and some big guys, maybe sportsmen or so, ask you, "Do you know that there's election today? Do you plan to come?" And that is quite frightening for people, of course. And only 0.7% are not impressed by this method.
They're also sportsmen.
Probably. And most of the people think that going to the election is just part of the game. So they have to do it. And they don't bother much about crossing something or not. They do it as their duty in this country, and then they go. That's it. There are cabins where you can hide, but nobody goes in there. Even if you go in, well, you never know if you make a list of people who go in the cabin. Yeah, so the best way is to go, put your paper in the box as they want it, and go home, and that's it. Yeah. That is the election in Germany. The economic system is that shortly after the war, everything was brought into state property, all the big industry, the big factories, but all the small business too. Only the farmers got land. There was a land reform after the war, and every farmer got land. But in the late 50s, they started to try to persuade the farmers to give the land back to farming communities, as they call it, but that are state-owned farms, like the kolkhoz in the Soviet Union. There was some reluctance among the farmer population, and they tried to persuade them with different means to bring their land back into the farming communities. And in the early 60s, there was no private land anymore, no private farming in East Germany. But there was still a kind of private sector in the economy, little shops, handcrafts, very small businesses. Nobody was allowed to employ more than 3 people. If you employ more than 3 people, it would go to state property. And in the last 10 years, they tried, because it didn't work very well, and there was a big lack of service industry, they tried to allow more private business, but it is very difficult to establish a private business. My sister is a private weaver, and I know exactly how difficult it is to do it, because it is, in a way, it is supported by the state, because they need private business for improving the economy, but it is still against their ideology, and therefore there is always kind of up and down in the development. A bit about education, because that is a very sensitive sector in East Germany. The education is totally in the hand of the state. It is not allowed to have private schools, of course not, no private universities. The only exception is there are some church kindergartens for the age between 3 and 6. That is the only sector of education which is not state controlled. And the education is regarded as very important by the state. The indoctrination and the influence is very early. Because of the economic situation in East Germany, most women work. And one thing which is maybe a bit different from the Western world is that women's liberation is not a too big issue in East Germany, because women are economically perfectly equal. They get the same wages, they get the same positions in work. I worked as a construction worker for 2 years, and we had women in our brigade. And that means that women are economically independent. Every woman can do her own living. And that gives her a position which is much, well, I wouldn't say much better, but it's different from most women in the Western world, as far as I realize that. But that means that family life in East Germany is very difficult. In most families, both parents are working. That means, where have the kids to go? After a year, they go to a state kindergarten. One good thing about the situation in East Germany is that every woman gets 1 year full paid off work if she has a baby. And the job is guaranteed. She goes back to the same job that's guaranteed. And what is even better is if the parents decide that the man gets a baby year, then the man can do it. The woman works and the man stays home. I think that's a very nice thing. But after this year it starts. Then you have to go back to work. The kid comes in the Kinderkrippe, as we call it, in the kindergarten. And they start political influence, political propaganda, already at the age of 1. They have to learn songs about the beautiful socialism, about how important soldiers are for the defense of communism. They learn who the enemies are, and so on. I know that because my nephew and my niece just went through that. They both went to a state kindergarten, and my sister wrote a letter to the president that she protests against this indoctrination of kids, because she thinks that such things have nothing to do in the kindergarten. Anyway, in the school it begins more and more. Every school kid has to go in the youth organization. Of course it is free, but every kid has to go. Because if you don't go, you are an outsider and you are out of the career. I can tell that because I never was a member of the youth organization and I was out of Korea from the very beginning. So imagine if you are a parent, you have a kid at the age of 6, it goes to school, how would you decide? I mean, if you are 18 or if you are 20, it's easy to decide for or against something. But if you think about the kids and their future, it's very difficult for parents. So 90 to 95% of the kids go to the pioneer organization, the youth organization.
Would that be similar to the Hitler Youth of the Hitler regime?
Well, it's always difficult to draw parallels, but the how it works, there are some similarities. It is very often said that this is not a communist youth organization, but open for everybody, for Christians too. And they try to say that atheistic propaganda is not a basic thing done there in these youth groups. But it's very difficult. I mean, of course, it is a youth organization of the state, and the state is a socialist state. And therefore, of course, the philosophy of the state is very influential in these organizations. And I would have a hard time to send my kids to the youth organizations. My parents decided that my younger brother and my younger sister should go after the experience what happened to the older kids. But it made no difference because they belonged to a family of outsiders, so it made really no difference. And then at the age of 14, there is a so-called Jugendweihe, a kind of rite, a communist rite from childhood to adult. And that is a very decisive moment in life of people, because even if you are not a member of the youth organization, you can go by. But if you don't take part in this, then you are really in trouble. And there was a big discussion among the churches and the Christians whether they should allow kids of Christian parents and kids who wanted to be confirmed by the church to take part in this. And it was a long battle from the late 50s to the late 60s, and finally the church accepted that Christians take this ceremony because there was no way to not accept it. Maybe that's enough about the situation and background information. And I show you now quickly, I ran again out of time, it's too bad. I go quickly through the slides, if you agree, or would you like more to have an open discussion right now?
I was just curious, Michael, and maybe you're going to address this later. I would be, some of the social concerns that we're dealing with as Americans are things like teenage pregnancy, AIDS, things like that. Is there a problem at all in East Germany with that kind of thing? Or do all of the children really respect the adults and there's a real cohesive family life? What's going on?
Okay, I have to repeat the question I was told because it is taped. The question was if there are any problems like teenage pregnancy, AIDS, and so on, and how teenagers fit into the system. There are some advantages of the system. Well, we could discuss if there are advantages or disadvantages. The main thing of the system in East Germany is that everything is under control. There's not much room for countercultures, for activities on the grassroots level. Everything is organized from above to below. That has a result that, for example, there are actually almost no drugs in East Germany. There is no drug problem in East Germany, which is good. But the reason is not good. Of course, there are problems with teenagers, like everywhere in the world. But the special problem of teenagers and the life of teenagers in East Germany is that they have no room for developing their own personality. And that is very, very bad. And I see that in the church, in my youth group, that is a big task for the church. To give young people the possibility to try something, whereas it is bad or good for them, but to develop a kind of
independent thinking
and ability to form an own understanding of the world. In East Germany, you are told everything. You are told how you have to understand the world, how you have to understand the political life, how you have to understand culture, everything. So people are not used to think. It is amazing to bring a new idea in a group of school kids who come to the church. It is like there was a film, a movie about a bike race in the 30s. I don't know if they ever showed it in the United States. It was a French film, and it started in black and white. And then when the race started, it became CinemaScope and color. That was a great effect. It was a very good thing. And sometimes it is this way, that you see only black and white, and only the narrow screen. And you have to teach the people that the world is colorful, and the world is broad, and there are so many things different, and you have to accept differences. It's not that the big mistake the church did a lot of times in their history is to do exactly the same thing, yeah? To teach black and white and narrow thinking. And the big task of the church in East Germany is to make people discovering that our world is colorful and different and that the differences are beautiful. And some people say in Europe, who traveled, obviously Western people, that East Germany is the most boring country of the world. And in a way that is true, you have not much to do there. And that's a big problem for teenagers who want to do something, to experience something, to have excitement. And these are the problems of teenagers, not so much teenage pregnancy. That's not a big issue in East Germany. AIDS becomes an issue. And I hope that people are not so narrow-minded there than people I met here about AIDS.
I want to see your slides, but I have to follow up your answer to the question by asking how did, with the way you explain how the kids are indoctrinated and are given this black and white narrow picture, how did you break through that? You don't seem to have that view. You have a much broader view. How did you?
Well, that's a kind of miracle, I think. Well, I have to mention my parents. Most of my education I didn't get at school. Most of my education I got at home. And I mean, I could be a normal, ordinary person in East Germany. I'm not. I'm really not, because of my parents. Because they made me reading books, which is very important. The book is one of the most important things in East Germany, because books open the world for you. And as people who cannot travel, it's important to have the world. And they made me thinking about politics. That was one thing. The other thing is that our family has strong relations to West Germany. Most of my relatives live in West Germany. Actually, my father was educated in West Germany, and the whole family lived in West Germany. Before the war, they lived in Pomerania, which is now Poland. And my father decided to go to East Germany as a pastor, because, of course, at this time it wasn't to see that the total separation would happen in Germany. I don't know how he would have decided if that would be obvious. That would have been obvious at this time. But he decided that it is important that there is a church in East Germany. And therefore he wanted to be a pastor in East Germany. But the rest of the family stayed in the West. So all my uncles, my aunts, my grandparents, all are living or have been living in West Germany. And that, of course, brought some influence to our thinking. And I mean, we really experienced the separation. I mean, I saw my grandparents only 2 times in my life. And I brought them to the railway station and saw them going away in the train. And maybe you can imagine what that means for a kid of 10 years. So I really experienced that something was wrong, and I have to find out what was wrong. Maybe we can just open up the discussion and go through the slides a bit later, or I don't know if there are any questions right now. I think the questions are more important than the slides. I don't know how you think about it.
Well, eventually, do you think that the German people that are there in East Germany since the World War II, what percent of them are actually really communists or true communists?
That is a very difficult question. What is a true communist?
Well, I mean,
is a true communist somebody who agrees with the system there?
Yeah.
Is a true communist somebody who has an ideal of how the world should be? Or is a true communist a member of the party? I don't know. I think most people in East Germany do not care much. They are not very interested in politics. They try to find their way through all these difficulties and try to escape into their homes, to go into an inner emigration, and to make the best of the situation. They know they cannot change it, so let's make the best out of it. It's no wonder that people marry very early in East Germany, that the economic system in East Germany is the best, probably, in the communist bloc. So there are some things to achieve, a car, a flat, maybe even a house. So people work for that and try to leave the politics alone.
Is the church really grappling with the concern of how to relate to those people? You know, are you struggling to say how can we, if there is that great separation of, in order to survive as a Christian, you have to pull away? How are you the salt of the earth in that place then?
Well, I don't want to speak too much about that, because that is a topic of tomorrow.
Okay.
But I don't know how many people are able to come tomorrow, so I say some few words. I mean, the main work of the church concentrates today on working with young people who are very interested in church, because the church is the only difference in a country where all is uniform. So they are maybe not interested in religion, but they are interested in something which is different. That is a big chance for the church. And I hope the church in East Germany will be able to fulfill the expectation of these young people and to bring the gospel into it as something which is really different from the world and which offers a different lifestyle and a different possibility to manage your life in this world.
How are they showing their interest? How how are they showing that?
They come. They come to church. They do not become members of the church. Not always. Some become. That is the next stage. But they come. There was a church rally in 83. 100,000 people came in East Germany. It's incredible. And 80% of these 100,000 people were under 25.
Is that threatening to the government?
That is threatening and that is wanted, both. Mm-hmm. And that makes it difficult for the church to react and to handle the situation. It is a threat for the government because they want, of course, to control everything. And they know they cannot control the church totally. They try to control the church, but they cannot control the church totally. And of course they would like to have 100,000 people show up by their free will on a state rally. They show maybe up 200,000 people, but not by their own will. But it is wanted, on the other hand, because the state realized in the last 10 years that every country, wherever it is, needs a kind of ventil for unsatisfied people. And it is better that these people go to church rallies than they would protest against the state. So the church is in a way used to smooth down anger and unsatisfaction and so on.
But the church won't lead, those young people won't eventually become protesters against the government. The government doesn't worry about that.
That is a big problem in the church and in the relation between state and church. Because there was a development, and I speak about that on Saturday, in two special fields, in the peace issue and in the ecology issue, that it seemed that the development got out of control. And it was very obvious that the state did not tolerate that. And it interfered with all its powers against this development. So it is very obvious, as soon as the state feels threatened by what the church is doing, the state will interfere.
How does the state interfere?
By arresting people, by threatening people, by telling the church it should stop some activities.
And does it?
The church? Yes.
Oh. How did you get books?
I speak about that tomorrow too, but we are allowed to publish a small amount of books. We are allowed to publish Bibles. Bibles are no problem in East Germany. And it's interesting that the state does not fear religious people, but the state does fear people who think that their religious conviction have an impact on their political conviction too. And people who think that if they are Christians, it has something to do with their political life. And if you compare the situation of Christians in this country, people who think that they have to follow political convictions if they are Christians and that they are in trouble too. It is very interesting to see the parallels. So Bibles are no problem, and Bibles are not regarded as a threat to the state philosophy. That's interesting because it's different from the Soviet Union, for example, where it is very difficult to get a Bible, or in Czechoslovakia. But of course all books we publish are in a way censored. We cannot publish everything. The theological education is provided mostly by books from West Germany. And we are fortunately allowed to bring these books in.
Is there a cultural exchange between the two? Do you get television from
That is one big thing. Every evening at 8 o'clock there is a air unification of Germany by television, because then the Tagesschau and the evening program starts. In 75% of East Germany you can watch West German television, and most people do that. Was there were times when the state tried to stop that, but it didn't succeed, and now they do it more sophisticated. For example, if they have a political discussion in the West German TV, you can be sure that they show in East German TV what? What do you guess?
Sports.
Sports, or what is more important, American movies.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to admit that a lot of people prefer the American movies.
Are the American movies considered innocuous?
Yeah.
No war movies.
No war. I mean, not all American movies.
Yeah.
But there are a lot of American movies who fit perfectly into that.
Quite a few documentaries on the Holocaust within the last 5-6 years. Do you see any of those at all?
I saw the movie Holocaust in the West German TV, and I saw parts of, what was the title, this long documentary?
Schiller?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Schiller. But it's interesting that this is not a big topic in East Germany. There's one clear statement against the Nazis and against concentration camps and so on. And I think it's interesting that every student in East Germany has to visit a concentration camp. I think that's a good thing. But to speak about Jews in East Germany is a very sensitive problem because of the politics toward Israel. Israel is regarded as the aggressive enemy in the Middle East who threatens all the Arab people. And therefore, it's kind of difficult to speak about the Holocaust, Jews, and Israel in East Germany. And that's the case in all communist countries.
Are there any Jews left in East Germany?
There is a Jewish congregation in Leipzig and in Berlin, but not more than 500 people in whole East Germany, which is different from West Germany. The Jewish population is much larger in West Germany.
Why were you, I mean, I know you're here on exchange program, but why were you allowed to leave the country when you could defect, or you could bring back in more radical ideas and extract more problems for government? Why did they let you do that?
Well, that's a very sophisticated question. I mean, you can reason about that for hours, and I did that, of course. But if you play the game, you see that there are a lot of profits for the state in sending me here. I mean, if you play the cases through, if I would defect, for example, what would happen? They could say, look at these Christians. They are addicted to the West. They want the capitalist system. And they could put pressure on the church. Look, your people are just eager to leave and to support the West. If I go back, whatever radicals idea I bring in, I mean, I don't think that I can be much more radical than I'm already. So that makes not a big difference. And they can show people, well, and they know that I'm honest and that I'm not going to tell the people United States is heaven on earth, because it is not heaven on earth. And there are a lot of problems in this country. There are a lot of things I don't agree with here. And that is enough for them. I mean, just to bring critical points is a big deal. And on the other hand, to have me here, to speak to people here. I mean, how would you feel if here was sitting a person who would be totally persuaded by the communist system and would tell you that everything is wonderful there? You wouldn't be too persuaded, probably. So it's much better to have a critical person here, because, again, I'm honest, I don't tell you that everything is bad there, because not everything is bad there. So that's one try to answer. You can go deeper and deeper. So,